Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I believe, even as we reach nearly the hour and a half mark, I believe we had a Who's That Pokemon.
Okay, so I have a bit of a special kind of game for you three, because I wanted to make a big impact on my first episode, and I wanted to play a bit of a game of like Who's That Pokemon. I was looking into actual D&D monsters and things like that, trying to be like, I wonder if any of these like things like actually reference being weak against salt. Like, there's a couple of like vampires and such that specifically mention that they have a weakness against holy water, or that they don't regenerate hit points if they've taken damage from a certain type of damage. And I found one.
Ooh.
One monster in all of 5th edition D&D.
Ooh.
That specifically references salt in its stat block.
Okay, so let's just quickly...
Now, I'm including, just for what it's worth, I'm including all of the monster manuals, all of the extra adventures that add new stat blocks, new monsters and things like that. So as an example, Prince of Elemental Evil have new like cultists and things like that. There is one.
In all of the published material for 5th edition?
That I can find on D&D Beyond, yes.
Wild.
Wow.
So I want to play a bit of a game of like 20 questions with you guys. Yes or no questions. Let's see if you guys can figure out what it is.
Okay. So 20 questions, go around the table, see what we can do in that time.
Yeah, I'll keep track of the questions.
Perfect.
Tully, do you want to start us off?
Yeah.
Sort of an animal, vegetable or mineral situation.
Yeah. Okay.
Is it a mineral?
No.
Is it a...
Okay. Does it have a set physical form? As in, is it not amorphous?
Is it a tangible... As in, it's not a ghost?
A tangible form. So it's not a ghost, it's not an ooze.
Yes.
Okay. So it's got a defined form of sorts.
Yes.
Was it once a living humanoid?
No.
Interesting.
Does it have links?
Well,
hold on.
Oh, fucking...
Oh, sorry.
Cool you, Jez.
There's like another person here, Tully.
Oh, we're going around the circle?
Yeah, why not?
I thought.
Did you want to go?
Yeah. I thought I established that when I went... Sorry, was that not obvious?
No, I thought I was just sitting this one out because these two read dungeon books for fun.
That's
and
what I
assumed
based
not,
on Grace's.
I'm a jock.
Grace is a jock.
Grace is a jock.
Grace you is too busy playing
Grace is the
basketball.
Buffest one of all of us.
I mean, if she wants to play along, but...
You also don't have to ask a question if you don't want to.
No,
I'm just
that's
trying
fair.
To think of a question. Is it playable?
No.
Okay.
I mean, not unless your DM is like real freaky, but no.
Does it have links to the infernal?
No.
Does it speak common?
No.
Okay. So has a form...
Interestingly, none of you have asked what like creature type it is yet.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, I think, so it has a form. It did not used to be a humanoid.
I guess it could be an undead animal or something, though, still, couldn't it?
Yeah, does not have links to the infernal.
Can't speak common.
Can't speak common.
Can't be played. Is it undead?
No.
Well, I should have trusted that I covered that with my first question. I was like, no, I don't need to ask that. I already covered that. I covered that in like a more interesting way, but like, no, I'll just die. Fuck. Shit.
Tully, deep in the tank.
Is it weak against radiant damage?
No.
So it's just salt.
Just salt.
It's just okay. Salt.
Is it...
Does it have a link to pop mythology?
Like pop culture kind of thing?
As in, like, if you spoke to the average person on the street, would they have heard of this creature?
That's sort of a hard one. Kind of.
Okay. I will take a maybe, because that kind of places it in the not just... obscure D&D creatures, but also it's
no,
not
no, it's
vampire.
Not it's not like a beholder that's like specific to D&D. It's not like a whatever. It is it's a
but it's also not a vampire or a werewolf. It's not something that the average person on the street knows.
I'm gonna say that.
Is it weak? Hold on. Is it weak to salt for the same reason slugs are?
Lachlan, it's a giant snail.
It's a fucking giant snail.
It's a giant snail. It is a giant snail called the Haung Harask. It is from the Dungeon of the Mad Mage expansion, the oh Waterdeep Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
Oh my god.
It is a giant snail. It is literally a big old snail. It is a huge creature. It is described as being a snail the size of an elephant. And it has a challenge rating of 0 because it has no attacks.
Oh.
It just sits there and rolls around and has a specific ability called salt vulnerability that says a pound of salt thrown onto the snail's skin deals 1d6 acid damage to it.
Oh, shit.
It's the only creature in 5th edition that specifically references salt. It's just a big fuck-off snail.
I mean, I've read Junji Ito. Anything with a spiral can be scary. You could do it. You can make it scary.
I'm imagining putting this in a campaign as you are in a city and you see a herd of elephant-sized snails coming towards you, and you're like, the players, it's like, it's coming slowly, but it's coming, and the
like
guards
the running
are real
of,
worried
like
about
Like the
it.
Running of the bulls, but like, really slow.
And all the players are like, well, fuck, how do we, I guess we've got to fight them, I think. And then they just don't do anything.
Yeah, they
you just
like,
need to salt them.
So they just slide off over the walls and down the other side and through the city and then back out. And that's it.
They just, they go around terrorizing really large farms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Munching on every tree.
So
there's just a lot of slime.
It's because when you were like, it's not an ooze, I was like, ah.
I mean, it's not an ooze.
No,
it's a creature.
It is oozy, though. Yeah, it is like.
It is oozy. It's a slimy.
It is slimy, but it's not a slime. It's the only creature I could find that had any reference to salt. Although, its specific salt vulnerability, a pound of salt feels like a lot of salt for only a D6 of damage. Mm. But it's a nice starting off point that you could put onto any number of creatures that are vulnerable to salt in mythology. I mean, my starting point would be to go for fiends, specifically like demons, because I find that while devils are also fiends and it's more that direct mythology to the devil, demons tend to be a bit more yucky.
Yeah.
And salt feels a bit more purifying against something that's got worms coming out of it than, you know what I mean?
And that's like the distinction in D&D does seem to be devils are very neat and tidy. They look they look horrifying, but they don't look disgusting.
Yeah.
Demons generally look pretty disgusting.
Whilst they are terrifying, you'd be pretty okay to shake a devil's hand. A demon you don't want within 40 feet of you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, traditionally, shaking the hands of devils
is a separate problem, yes.
Typically does come with its own suite of concerns.
But I suppose that's why the devils want their hands to be shakeable.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my kind of pitch was like this particular salt vulnerability. Now, you could also use it as a similar to a hydra taking fire damage or a undead taking radiant damage.
It
something
stops
that,
it from regenerating.
Right. A regenerating creature that does not regenerate if you toss salt on it. Now, I wouldn't say a pound of salt, because that's a lot of salt.
Well, actually, if you were in a position where there was a city that used bartering, that regularly used quantities of salt as a standard measure of barter, then potentially you could do that.
Alternatively, you could work out the weight, what the like ratio is to the weight of an elephant, and then just like have it be like per, because I would imagine the reason they say it's a D6 for a pound of salt is because an elephant-sized snail would be so big, and to kill a snail with salt, you'd have to cover it in it. So you could only put a pound of salt on like part of it. So you'd only like hurt the left side of the snail's face.
I guess if something is, I don't know how much a pound of salt is, but I imagine if it was a snail the size of an elephant, yes,
a pound of sugar.
Okay, so yeah,
that.
So I would imagine that like it still feels like I. Now, having seen the Haung Harask stat block, it's a challenge rating 0. It doesn't have a lot of hit points. It's got an armor class of 9. Like, it's
pretty hard to miss
It's a giant snail. It doesn't move very quickly. I genuinely, I, I spent money on this because I didn't want to buy the Dungeon of the Mad Mage thing. So I specifically just bought for like 99 cents. I bought the Hound Harask.
Oh my God.
And I bought something else that I needed for a campaign. But I spent money because I wanted to play Who's That Pokemon with a giant snail.
I mean, it was very good.
So the whole thing is like, I think you could translate that across. You could have certain rules. I mean, like the pretty standard, like I hate saying it, but like the supernatural thing of like a line of salt will stop ghosts and shit like that. Like, I don't know about salting weapons, but the same philosophy of like putting holy oil on a sword.
I mean, it's pretty hard to get salt to stick to a sword unless you try real hard. So if they're working hard enough to do it, I'm happy for it to do something.
Yeah.
Fun fact, 1 pound of salt is nearly 2 cups.
Yeah, it's about half a kilo.
Okay, so that so 2 cups of salt, actually that makes, that's that feels reasonable. Pretty
so it's like
reasonable.
2 salt shakers essentially. Like 2 salt grinder kind of fulls of thing is
on
like...
On a huge, it's literally its size category is huge. So if I'm thinking like a human sized thing, I could probably get the same effect from like a kind of pocket sand of salt.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like, I think it's the equivalent. I'm feeling the same kind of.
Yeah. I think it's the equivalent of like throwing the, it's like the, it's the elephant snail size equivalent of throwing a pinch of salt in the devil's face because he's little.
Because I'm imagining like this sort of 2 cups of salt being about like a large snowball's worth. If you were to get like a salt slurry going, it's about a large.
Which
snowball's
I often
worth.
Do. Just to kind of roll
around.
Yeah.
I like to mix my basil tears in there.
Mm. Oh. Yeah, it's Italian style salt slurry.
I just as a side note, I'm gonna go completely off topic for a second. You said the word Italian, and my brain was like, "Ooh, I know a thing." So I was looking up holy water because of all my notes earlier.
Of the Italian.
Because there is in the 2009 swine flu pandemic, there was a particular town in Italy whose church installed one of those automatic hand sanitizer things where you don't actually have to touch it, full of holy water.
Yes.
Oh, not God. Because they thought the holy water was going to wipe away their swine flu, but because they didn't want anyone sticking their hands in the big tub of holy water and baptizing a child with it. And then having to baptize
so
a second
good.
Child.
So clever.
So they had a little automatic.
So they had one for hand sanitizer and then one for holy water.
And we had one for holy water where you could stick your hand under it. It would squirt holy water on your hand and you would flick it on the child's
That's
head
incredible.
For the baptism.
Fun fact, people seem to think that war makes us like innovate and invent, but I think pandemics are way better because one, I saw somebody baptizing a kid with a super soaker. And second of all, I saw someone get one of those automatic hand dispensers. It's not hand dispensers, hand sanitizer dispensers, but they filled it with lube, which I thought was really fun and
That's
exciting.
Powerful.
Just as another side note, we have an automatic hand sanitizer thing on the desk at work, and people will always come up and stick their elbows on the thing and it will just put hand sanitizer all over their jacket. And it's the best thing
God.
To watch. People just come up and like get in my face, and I just have to look at them every time and be like, sir, you've
got hands out.
Anyway, so salt can be used in that way. I also had a thought about that fairy vampire myth of like counting the salt.
Mm-hmm.
And this was more like a very specific one. And I don't know that you could do this twice in the same campaign. We all know the like old lady hut in the woods. Mm. Something's not quite right. Turns out she's secretly a hag.
My retirement plan.
We've all played or DM'd that scenario. A, the big tick off is there's no salt in her house, right? Mm. But in D&D, we all know hags are the equivalent to witches and they are fae. So that kind of witch, fae, fairy thing of them not eating salt kind of ties in here. If the players have salt on them, which they may well do if this is near Tully's hypothetical city using salt as an economy, that may be a thing where you can spill salt. This may be a combat encounter that is way too powerful for them to actually win. But if someone spills salt on the ground, that's like a, you know, the hag makes a save and on a failure has to spend a certain number of rounds
counting the salt
and just has to stand there taking damage while she does.
Oh, I mean... That's
depending
incredible.
On how much they depending on how much they spill. Like if they've just got like a sack of the stuff, that's it. Combat over.
And I mean, you can have hags are magical creatures, so you can have it that they are supernaturally quick at what they're doing, but also you still have to count a lot of fucking salt.
And that's it, right? And so it's not necessarily a vulnerability to being splashed with the stuff, but certainly an alternate win condition for a combat that isn't just hit the thing until it dies.
Hell, you could make it mostly invulnerable, but make it count the thing until you've run far enough away that it can't catch you. Like, that's, if they can't kill a hag reasonably, they can still distract it for long enough to get the fuck out of there.
Mm. Yeah. Hmm. That's fun. I like that.
I really like
that. You could also translate that to vampires if you're playing Curse of Strahd, which I know some people here at the table are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, because you mentioned the, like, one of the signs that there's no salt in the house. It feels very much like vampire myths, where like one of the giveaways is like, oh, there's no mirrors in the whole building,
right?
And it's like, and they only drink red wine and that sort of like kind of thing. I like it.
I'm actually playing in Curse of Strahd at the moment. I'm one of the things I've considered is talking to our DM about, hey, so historically, here's what salt was used for. And one of the material components for the spell that makes holy water is silver.
Mm.
And now you are in Barovia.
There's
not much silver around because vampires are, you know, not great with silver. And so, you know, one of the things is I was going to talk to my DM and say, hey, so look,
can I
just
salt?
Like get like 20 gold worth of salt instead?
And I mean, it would also be like valuable and reasonably rare and like
actually
more useful in day to day. It's
I have to update my backstory to include a rich uncle with a salt mine.
Yeah.
So I've just had a thought, right, about currency and not salt as currency, but in Barovia, when you change a gold and you buy, if you give a gold over when buying a glass of wine or, you know, what a keg or something like that, when they give you change, do they just give you a fuck ton of copper coins, or are they using electrum?
Well, they specifically just don't
electrum
have
and
silver
copper
coins.
No silver coins.
I've not asked. Most of the campaigns that I work with work in like nice even round gold.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't get into like the change stuff.
So right now my character has 14 gold and 8 silver, and I'm wondering if that 8 silver is actually
is actually
more
valuable,
electrum and 6 copper and 30 copper.
Is this in our current Curse of Strahd game? Where did you get that change from?
From the
tavern?
Inn, from the tavern.
Then yes, it is copper.
It's just all copper. Just gave me a sack full of copper.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't even think about that. I should have mentioned that. Little bit, quick step back into my D&D session. Let's pretend that Tully, he gives you the change.
I order
and
the breakfast.
But it's weird because all of the change is in copper. Anyway.
It's completely irrelevant to me because my character in the Curse of Strahd campaign is a werewolf, and therefore silver's completely like nothing to me anyway.
Well, because I literally did a thing and I mentioned that very confidently because I specifically did come up with an excuse to check at the beginning of the session if anyone had silver listed on their character sheet.
Yeah, how much?
Because I had an NPC who, if they came into Barovia with silver, was going to kindly offer to swap it for some gold.
Nice.
It was gonna be like a thing.
That's pretty cool, but then none of us had gold. But
then none of you actually had any silver, and then I forgot about it by the time we actually used money.
Do you want me to explicitly mention it when we start up tomorrow?
Probably.
Yeah, cool. I'll mention it. I'll deliberately go and change my stuff to that amount of copper.
Yeah, cool.
Maybe in some electrum, because that seems to be the only use for electrum, is just not having 3 billion copper.
Oh, that's fine. You can put in an electrum.
Electrum is the dumbest currency in D&D.
Electrum's dumb as hell. Who the fuck uses electrum?
Vampires?
Or
Wizards of the
Strahd,
Coast,
I guess,
at
yeah.
me.
Or, let's be real, platinum coins? Go fuck yourself. Actually, go fuck yourself.
I mean, I don't mind having an additional, like, you know, order of magnitude up. But it's like just that it's worth.
It's like $100
five silver. But one electrum is worth 5 silver. Like you've got these even tens and then 5 silver.
But the solution to problems of currency like that would never have been, let's make a more valuable currency with a thing that we've decided is arbitrarily worth more. They would be like, I don't know. If it's
a bigger gold bit.
If it's way too many coins, give him something more valuable.
Give him a bar of gold. Give him just something.
A fancy gem.
Yeah.
A nice hat.
I'm a big fan of giving my players items made of platinum that are worth such and such many gold. You know, like my players.
A little platinum horse.
Yeah, like a flask made out of platinum. Or I think at one point I gave my players I went the next step up. I don't actually know if it is, but I one of them found a mithril dagger, and ooh. I was like, ooh, so yeah, you can like sell that for like 200 gold pieces, and the character went, nah, I'm using this, and has held onto it since like session 2 of the campaign.
Wild,
amazing.
Just for the. The shits and giggles, I guess.
I mean,
that's very cool.
It's cool. It is cool.
So, just because I kind of feel like there was a lot that we ran through, do we want to do a quick recap on all the things that, like, tiny details that maybe we didn't talk much on that we would love to bring in? Because I know I personally love the idea of actual bamboo and leather valves and pumps existing far pre-medieval times. I think that's real fucking cool.
Yeah, it's a fun, like, salt mine idea.
Yeah, I just think that's real fucking cool. I love the idea of substituting silver for salt. Like,
as a material component for holy water.
Yeah, and I mean, even if we're looking at clerics, I'm not sure how often clerics need material components except, like, a gem for revivify or whatever. But I really like the idea of perhaps being able to use... Because you can use your holy symbol in place of material components that don't have a cost. If they don't have a cost, could you use a handful of salt to do the same thing, sprinkled in the shape of your holy symbol?
I'd argue so.
If you're in a pinch, like you're in prison,
no pun intended.
if you're in a tight spot, and you find yourself without your holy symbol, but they've given you rations or whatever, could you then cast a spell by sprinkling salt in a sigil like your holy symbol?
I mean, if we're talking about using it as a replacement for the components for holy water, you could even get into a whole conversation about that as an entryway to making your magic components be more alchemical in function, in like the way that you describe them in the game anyway. Which, I mean, I guess is kind of a waste because the alchemist exists now, but still.
I am a fan of, personally as a DM, I'm a big fan of letting my players kind of flavor their own components or spell effects and things like that. And one of the things that I've like thought about is like the third level spell Magic Circle. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know off the top of my head what the spell components for Magic Circle are. If it is not already, salt is a pretty good like alternate.
That's a pretty
like
solid
a pretty
one.
Solid alternate like flavor. Like if you're saying, well, my character doesn't have an arcane focus, I'm just going to use spell components. As you said, unless it's a spell component that requires
a specific
cost, I'm pretty happy for players to just kind of say, I'm using a spell component that fits flavor-wise. I've had players cast Fireball by flicking alcohol at people, like dipping their fingers in a flask of alcohol and flicking it that way because alcohol's flammable.
Yeah. Mm.
Things like that.
I mean, the component for Gust of Wind is a bean. It's a pun. It's a pun. So, So clearly they didn't care all that much about it being like that specific. You can play around with those ones.
I mean, I was going to say, if we're talking about like substitutions and stuff, clerics and having different substances that are the equivalent of holy water or salt. Like, for example, I remember Lyra has a connection to roses because I was trying to recreate Tuxedo Mask as a playable character. And so I was trying to link the roses in there somehow. But anyway, Lyra has a connection to roses, and perhaps you would be able to get like a rose water would be the equivalent of like a holy water or similar stuff.
It doesn't make sense for clerics to use the same kind of material components for their spells as arcane casters like sorcerers and
that's
wizards.
Fair.
It, like for a spell, I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head that I know the spell components for, but a wizard casting Fireball might use sulfur and bat guano. A cleric who can cast Fireball like a forge cleric, maybe. I don't know off the top of my head, but a cleric casting the same spell, it doesn't thematically make sense to use the same stuff because wizards definitely seem more the science-y side of magic.
Mm.
But on the other hand, when you're talking about an era where people believed that like religion was magical, having active chemicals having something do a chemical reaction was magic. It was God, it was science, it was all of that all at the same time. So it would also, like, it wouldn't be, I think there's a way to construe it where they use the same materials and it's because the like wizards have studied what clerics use for their things, and clerics are like, well, this is just what sulfur and this thing does. That's just how it works. God said so. And wizards are like, no, you fucking idiot. It just makes fire. You're so dumb.
Well, that's to me why like clerics have holy symbols and wizards use spell components. Mm. Like that's the holy symbol is for you to hold up your crucifix or your symbol of Lyra and point it at someone and cast Guiding Bolt. And you don't have to be like, oh, I'm going to fiddle through my pouch to get a sprinkle of sand and a feather. Like you don't, that's it,
so
right?
So by that sort of thing, I would love to see clerics using instead more like sacrificial style, like primitive, but like more simply
Old Testament stuff.
I'm thinking like a cleric carrying around a flask of sacrificial lamb's blood that they then throw out, and that's the material, that's the spell, is like casting it with this sacrifice that they've made rather than through a holding symbol or with specific components.
There's a, if any of you have watched Dragon Prince, there's like a particular type of magic in Dragon Prince where instead of a natural connection to the world and your magic comes from the world itself, there's a dark magic which is transferred from living things, and then you kind of, you take a living thing and you crush it and you kill it. And you use like a unicorn's horn or part of its body parts, and you channel the magic of that thing into whatever spell you're trying to make. Mm. And that seems like a very necromancery type thing, you know, to have a jar of, let's say, fireflies, and you just have to pop it open, open one up, crush it in your hand, and cast daylight.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's not the traditional... I'm sure that there are...
That's pretty cool.
I'm sure that there are ways to do that with traditional components and saying like, oh, I'm gonna use, especially for some of the more earth ones, salt feels more like an alchemical component than a religious one. You could definitely use salt as a component for like earthen grasp.
Yeah.
That's true.
In a lot of like, I want to say Wiccan, but also like a lot of...
Kind of like pagan.
Pagan religions, things like that. Thank you. Salt is associated with the element of earth.
Yeah.
And so things like that can be...
Yeah. That's cool. But I mean, even on the other hand, like you were talking just before about how, like, for religious reasons, throwing salt along the line of your door would be considered as, like, an effective thing as, like, a ritual of faith. So yeah. I could also see an argument where you, like, intentionally skin your cleric to be very, like, alchemical or very, like, wizard-based in the thing. Like, using those kind of, like...
There is an arcana cleric.
Yeah. And then just being like, well, these are the rituals. The rituals happen to be like this. Sure, it looks like chemistry, but it's not. It's the rituals.
It's that kind of line of people who are old history and things like that. I couldn't tell you a period in history because I don't know anything about history, but that kind of like the church going, you know, oh, this person's, you know, working witch magic, and this person's like, no, I'm a doctor. Like, I'm doing these things. I'm a, you know, good God-fearing Christian holding up my crucifix and whatnot, but I'm also have studied how the human body works, and I know that, you know, this doesn't work for that and this works for this. And
yeah, and that'd be Dark Ages probably.
Yeah, it feels pretty Dark Ages.
I saw it in Castlevania.
Yeah, so. I was gonna say that's season one of Castlevania.
Yeah, that's it. All of my knowledge of history comes from pop culture. That's yeah. it. I'm that's like, all you I don't, need. I don't know what you're talking about, but it was in like an episode of Game of Thrones once.
Yeah, I back it.
I mean, yeah. they do their research.
Yep.
Yeah. So
sometimes,
not enough.
Yeah. Well,
you know what they need to do better? Their market research.
Fucking got them. Take that, HBO.
Please don't sue us.
No, sue me, HBO.
I mean,
do
what, it. What can sue HBO this podcast take from me? For everything it has.
Fuck HBO. What could I say to get HBO to sue me? Hold on. HBO. What's come on, guys, help me. Go on. Say something. Come up with something slanderous.
I'm just sort of waiting for Lachlan to like come up with
HBO,
something good.
Then you could probably do something. But HBO will drag their name through the mud for publicity. They just will.
HBO.
HBO make evenings with my mother very uncomfortable because we'd watch Game of Thrones together and she'd fast forward past all the sex scenes, which is even worse than just watching them because it called so much attention to what was happening on screen. And also I missed a lot of plot and didn't know what was happening.
A lot of plot happens in the sex scenes.
It was really
weird.
Important. I was like, "Can we? Oh my God, this is even worse. Can we please just watch the 30 seconds of nudity, please?"
Whoa, guys, I just got some breaking news. I just heard that the HBO has petitioned the UN to repeal the Geneva Convention. What? Whoa!
Oh my God.
HBO says war crimes are good?
This is all getting cut, right?
Oh my God. Fiction does affect reality.
I mean, if HBO did decide to sue us, that's the biggest publicity boost we will ever get. Can you imagine?
The most listeners will ever receive.
I've already destroyed my career at Disney, and now let's go for one more.
HBO.
Well, I mean, they were inevitably going to make moves along those lines after they started destroying all those churches, though.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Dungeon Deep Dive.
Another two episodes of Dungeon Deep Dive.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you along for the ride. Once again, we've been your regular hosts, Tully.
I'm...
Hi, it's me. I'm Grace.
And our fantastic guest for these weeks,
Maddie.
Thank you very much. If you want to get in contact with us, you can catch us on our socials at Dungeon Deep Dive on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Hopefully, we will have posted something sometime in the past month.
Oh my God, I posted literally yesterday, Tully. Stop roasting me. Stop it.
Or if you don't like the socials or you'd like to give us a little more extended feedback, please feel free to write to us at deepdivetnc@gmail.com.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you would like to sue us, please don't email.
If you'd like to sue us, you can @pissthem on Twitter.
If you need to sue me enough, you'll know where to find me.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.